So let's get started then. So my name is Damian Hobson-Garcia. I'm an engineer at Ego. We're a consulting company out of Tokyo, and I'm here today to talk to you about porting Tizen IVI 3.0 to an ARM-based SoC platform. So currently, if you have an Intel-based platform, running IVI 3.0 is quite simple, right? You have pre-compiled images that you can just download, flash onto your system, and you're ready to go. However, if you're on an ARM system, it's not quite so simple. And I know there's been a lot of chatter and some recent developments on getting IVI to ARM, but when we started doing this porting, there was nothing. So basically, we said, well, there's nothing available right now, so let's port it ourselves. And so this presentation is, I hope to show you the results of what we've done with the porting, what we needed to do, what worked out of the box, and if you need to do any porting for yourself on your own systems, maybe it'll give you some hints and some ideas about how you can do just that. So let me start with a brief explanation of the platform that we targeted. So we targeted actually two platforms, both of them Renesas RCAR Gen 2 series platforms. The first one was the RCAR M2. It's a dual-core ARM Cortex A15 device. And the second one is the H2, which is a quad-core device, very similar. It also has the option to add four more ARM Cortex A7 cores for a total of 8 cores on the device. So both of these systems have 3D graphics supplied by Imagination Technologies PowerVR series of GPUs. An important point for us was the fact that the drivers for these GPUs do not use Mesa as the Intel drivers do. And both of these systems have onboard IP for doing things like hardware, video encoding and decoding, as well as image processing. So, excuse me, what the rest of this talk will be is as follows. So I'll start with a brief objective, some explanation of what specifically we were trying to do, move into the methodology of how we did it, and then talk about some of the details about some of the tasks that we needed to do in order to actually get the system up and running. So, as I said, we want to have IVI 3.0 on ARM, and specifically our RCAR M2 H2 platforms. So we defined, so of course we want to have all of the IVI-ish type things that you expect, right? So the automotive messaging broker and Murphy and all these kinds of things. But specifically for our case, we defined three specific milestones. And the first one was to have regular native applications. So of course, things like the simple terminal program, OpenGL ES applications. The second step was to have web applications, so the web browser as well as web applications. And then the last, we wanted to make use of the multimedia acceleration engines provided by the RCAR platform and integrate those into the Tizen release as well. So our methodology was pretty standard porting methodology, right? So the first thing we did, start with a known good base. And what we chose for our known good bases were the milestone releases for IVI 3.0. We started off originally with M2 September from last year and then moved into the M2 EOY. And then recently, the M2 14.1, or March 2014, came out, and we did a report again on that just to keep everything up to date. So we start with a known good base. Everything that's hardware independent, basically just recompile. And everything that, for the ARM architecture, and everything that's hardware dependent, either replace or update or modify or do whatever we could to get it to run on the RCAR system. So let me start my explanation of how we did it with an overview of the Tizen build workflow. Just a quick question, how many people here have built the Tizen packages or built a Tizen image? One or two, right? So for other people, maybe they haven't seen this build flow before. So basically, so Tizen is comprised of many hundreds of packages. And there's two repositories that hold these packages. So you've got a source repository at review.tizen.org. It holds source code in a Git for all the packages that comprise Tizen. And then you have a binary repository at download.tizen.org. And You can just start with the binary repository. Everything's in RPMs if you want to, and use the image creation tool called MIC, and just pick up all the packages that are necessary to actually create a Tizen image, run them through MIC, and MIC will generate for you a file system, image that you can flash onto your system, and away you go. But let's say you want to update something in Tizen. Well, as I said, all the source code is available, so you can just pick up the one package that you want to update, make your local changes, and then run it through GBS, use GBS to compile. And GBS will pick up all the dependencies that your updated package needs from the upstream RPM, the precompiled RPM library, combine those with your local changes, and then make yourself a local version of your package, which then you can, again, pass to MIC, which will take your local version of the package combined with all of the other sort of upstream versions of all the other packages and put that into your own customized image, right? So that's a general workflow. For us, we couldn't use that exact workflow because of the fact that for IVI 3.0, there's no upstream repository, precompiled upstream repository for ARM packages, right? So everything upstream is compiled for Intel, right? So basically what we need to do was a full compile from source. Unfortunately, if you look at the on source.tizen.org, there's a nice explanation of how you can go about building the Tizen image from scratch, from source, right? Everything. That's been regularly updated, and I think the most recent update was about 2 weeks ago, and I think it covers pretty much almost everything that you need in order to build Tizen from scratch. Of course, that's building Tizen from scratch for Intel, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about what's different when you're compiling for ARM. So the first thing you need to do if you're going to compile anything, of course, is to pick up the source code, right? And I said that the source code was maintained in upstream Git libraries, and which it is, and you can grab all of those, all that source code using the repo tool. Now, if anybody has built Android before, they will recognize the repo tool, which is developed by Google to maintain their source code trees and is now being used to maintain the Tizen source code trees. So you execute the command that's shown on there, and you get a bunch of files dumped into your build path, right? And maybe for people at the back of the room, they can't see in front of the repo file at the beginning there's a dot in front of that. So if you do the repo sync and you do an ls and there's nothing in the directory, you haven't screwed it up. It's a dot directory, so you need to ls-a or something. So inside that directory, it has all of the metadata that you need to download all of the packages, the Tizen packages. So you get more than just these files. These are just the ones that we're concerned with right now. So if you, at this point, do the next step in the build process, which is repo sync, what you'll get is the heads of every package that is inside the Tizen release. But I said before, we don't want to start with the heads. We want a known good release. So instead of actually the heads of everything, what we want is the source code for one or each of the milestone releases that were released, that we start as our known good image. And fortunately, with each of those milestone releases comes a manifest file. So the default manifest file that contains all the information for all the projects is project.xml. In each of the milestones, there's another manifest file which contains the commit IDs in the Git repositories of every package in Tizen at the time that milestone release was made. So it's a snapshot of the source code at that time. So that's what we want to use. And basically, so all you do is you go to the path on download.tizen.org that hosts the milestone release. Inside those directories, you pick up the manifest file, overwrite your projects.xml file, and you're done with that. So once you have the source, what you want to do is actually compile it. And to do that, you're going to need a tool chain. Now, the default paths in, the Tizen IVI branch of the ARM tool chain is actually empty as of the last time I checked. Maybe they've added something in since then. So there's no tool chain in there for you to use to compile ARM. However, the mobile branch does have the tool chain that you need. So all you need to do really is update this prebuilt.xml file to use the mobile branch instead of the IVI branch, and you get everything you need. So at that point, you can do a repo sync. You'll get all the source code that you need to start. You'll get the tool chain that you need to start compiling with, and you're ready to go. So what do you have to do next? Well, the first thing you're going to do is recompile all of that stuff. And there's about 800 packages or so. So you start the compile and go for several tens of cups of coffees. And maybe several hours to maybe half a day later, you'll end up with some sort of image. And that image won't work. It might work to some extent, depending on the graphics drivers that you have. For us, our graphics drivers do not use Mesa, and so definitely for us, it would not work at all. We needed to make changes to Wayland Weston. We need to make changes to WebKit, and we needed to do some stuff with multimedia in order to get the system up to the level that we wanted to and meet the milestones that we had set for ourselves. So I'll take those through one by one. So first, replacing the Wayland Weston backend, the Mesa implementation of the Wayland Weston backend with our own version. So I'll start with a very high-level overview of Wayland Weston. So Wayland Weston is a client-server-based windowing system. Right? So every application that wants to output something onto the screen in the Wayland Weston world is considered a client. Right? And every client is responsible for updating its own sort of output buffer. This is my thing that I want to put on the screen. So the client is responsible for making that, which, you know, of course, makes sense. So once the client has that output buffer, it sends a message to a server, right? And the server will then get those requests and get all the buffers from all the clients and composite them all into one output that you can see on the screen. So in our image on the right here, the terminal window there will be a client, and each of those little triangle applications would be a client, and the server would composite those all together up onto the screen. So the name of the protocol that the clients use to talk to the server is called Wayland, and the name of the default implementation of the compositor is Weston, so hence the name Wayland Weston. Right? So what does that look like in the world of Mesa and the Intel implementation? Well, in order for the Weston compositor to actually output data onto the screen, Mesa provides it with several interfaces. So the first of which is called WLDRM. And what this allows the system to do, basically this interface allows the client processes to share their buffers with the server. Because if the server can't access the buffer, it can't do anything. It can't put anything on the screen. So once the server has the buffers, the OpenGL driver, which has to support a Wayland EGL extension, right, so that the OpenGL driver knows what a Wayland buffer is and how it works and how to access it. So once you have an OpenGL driver that supports that, the Weston compositor will use the OpenGL driver together with GBM, which is a generic buffer manager, to access the hardware to put the client's graphics buffers onto the screen. All right. And the buffers, of course, are going to have some sort of format, and that's going to be defined by libdrm. And so in the case of Intel graphics, you use libdrm_intel, which, of course, as the name suggests, is Intel-specific code, right? Intel-specific formats for those buffers. So the green areas here are all things that are sort of either Intel-specific or Mesa-specific. As I mentioned, in our case, we don't have Mesa drivers, so it's like, well, what do we need to do? We need to replace all that green stuff with something else. So we have the PowerVR OpenGL drivers, which have to support that same Wayland EGL interface. So we get that from the chip manufacturers. So that's kind of a given. And then what we need to do is to do something with the rest, right? So for the GBM portion, there's a standalone version of that called libgbm. So we just pull that in. The WLDRM, which is the buffer sharing mechanism, we implemented our own version, which does pretty much the same thing, except it uses different buffers, uses a different backend. So while the default Intel implementation uses libdrm Intel and Intel-specific buffers, what we use, we allocate our buffers through libkms, And our buffers that we use are dumb buffers. So they're just nothing but blocks of physically contiguous code. Memory. Right, so there's no special attributes. It's not specifically graphics memory or anything like that. It's just a chunk, a dumb chunk of memory. Right. So just to kind of spell out the details of that, so as I said, you have to have this EGL extension. The name of that extension is EGL WL bind whale and display. It's kind of a mouthful. And the URL is more of a mouthful, but that's it over there, the big blue thing. That has, if you go there, it's got all the details of what the EGL extension is and how it works and what happens to the EGL, so the OpenGL API once you say you've supported this extension. So this, you have to have an OpenGL driver that supports this. And then once, if you have that, then if you provide the following, then you can actually get something out of your system. So I mentioned you have this standalone libgbl. We got source code from that from Mr. Rob Clark's GitHub. He's got that's an open library. Libdrm and libkms, the source for those, that's already included in Tizen release, right? So all you need to do is specify the type of buffers that you're going to be using, and that's going to be done through your kernel driver. And then once you have this buffer sharing mechanism, we had, based on the Mesa libdrm, as I said, we called ours libkms. Once you have this buffer sharing mechanism, then you have everything that you need in order to replace Mesa with your own implementation, right, based on the embedded system, graphic system that you have on your device. So as for the actual replacement, well, the first step is really simple. You just delete the old stuff and copy in the new stuff, right? Pretty straightforward. So you delete the Mesa libraries, you copy in your own libraries. This is the source code. And then you update the configuration file. So when you're building with GBS, there's a configuration file that will control the way that GBS basically builds all the packages. And if once again, if you look at the Building Tizen from Scratch page on sourcetizen.org, there's more of a detailed explanation of that file. But basically what you need to do, you're getting rid of Mesa, so you want to remove all references to Mesa in that file. So there's two places that's defined, one at the top, one at the bottom. And then if you're using an embedded OpenGL implementation, you don't have full OpenGL support. What you have is GLES instead. So in the package config line there, what we did was basically remove the requirement to have OpenGL and replace it with null. So we substitute package config GL with nothing. So that means that we're not going to support any OpenGL, like full OpenGL. We support GLES. And we don't have Mesa, so we remove the Mesa development libraries and replace them with more generic OpenGLES 2.0 development libraries. All right. So once you've done that, the only thing left to do is to build it. And the build command they have here on the right is, again, kind of abridged. For the full build command line, once again, source.tizen.org for the building Tizen from scratch page. And I've got a link at the end of this presentation that has the details I've got a slide at the end of this presentation that has the links for the URL for that page. So once we had that, we were golden in terms of native applications, right? We could run stuff like the terminal programs and the little triangles that you see there just by providing our own implementation of the graphics stack. And so we had those and we were happy with that, and we said, well, let's try web pages, right? So we loaded up the mini browser and nothing. Like, okay, well, what's going on there? So we did some investigation and we found that we needed to implement something called a Whalen buffer manager. So let me just take one step back and sort of refresh the memory again about a simple client server configuration in Whalen Weston. So you've got this client application and he makes his buffers, puts something in his buffers he wants to put on the screen. He shares it with the server takes his buffers, puts it on the screen, right? Now, if you're dealing with, when you're dealing with WebKit, it's a little bit more complicated, right? You actually have the client itself is actually split into two processes. So let's look, for example, at web browser, right? So in the web browser, you've got a, in any WebKit application, you have two processes, the UI process and the web process. And in the case of a web browser, so the UI process will, you know, create the window and the menus and the buttons and whatnot, and the web process will actually render the web content that you want to show, right? So in this case, the UI process acts as a client server. So first, the web process generates the image of the web page that you want to show. Sends those buffers to its server, which is the UI process. It maybe adds something to it, maybe not. And then once it's done with it, it shares it with its server. The UI process shares it with its server, which is the compositor, which puts it on the screen. So you've got this hierarchical court sort of scenario. And if you have Mesa drivers, that works great, right? It works as it is, and you have no problems. If you don't have Mesa drivers, it doesn't work so much. And the reason for that is that if you don't have the Mesa drivers, while there's a method for the UI process to share its buffers with the server process, there's no way for the web process to share its buffers with the UI process. You need to implement that, right? Now, the good thing is that basically there's an interface that's defined for you, right? It's an abstract class called the Wayland Buffer Manager class that defines an interface. It's about 5 functions, and all you need to do is implement them based on the types of buffers that you're going to be using for your system. And in our case, we also had to make one more change because the name of the buffer sharing interface that we use, as I said, was WLKMS instead of the default Mesa WLDRM. So we made changes to that in a Wayland buffer, in another class called the Wayland Buffer class, to do that sharing, and then we implemented the interface for which the abstract class is already defined. So it's already there, the hooks are already there. And that's basically all we needed to do. So what that looks like, so the source code for both of those is in this path, and the interface is shown on the bottom here. 5 functions, pretty simple stuff. So allocating buffers, freeing buffers, you know, locking and unlocking buffers, and then one function to actually pick up the virtual address so you can put something into the buffer to put onto the screen. So once we had that done, the web was ours. So we could use the mini browser web application that comes built in with WebKit. We could use things like Ghost Cluster, which you may have seen demoed around either today and yesterday. And using Ghost Cluster, we were also able to verify the operation of the automotive message broker. So we were quite happy with that. And that brings me to our last milestone and my last section here, which is multimedia. So we were happy with that, but we wanted to get, as I said, make use of the acceleration, video acceleration capabilities of the RCAR devices. And we set as a target having 1080p, so full HD video running at 30 frames per second. So before I get into the details of that, let me just talk a little bit about the multimedia library that is used on Tizen 3.0, and that's GStreamer. So for anybody who hasn't used GStreamer before, basically GStreamer is a set of libraries that allows you to encode or decode, capture or display any type of multimedia data. Right, so it could be audio data, video data, whatever. And the way it works is you've got a GStreamer sort of framework, and on top of that you have a series of plugins. And each plugin does one specific thing, right? So in the case you connect all these plugins to make a pipeline. So in the case, if you want, for example, if you want to decode video, you might have a pipeline that looks like this, where you have a video demuxer, which will, let's say you feed into it an MP4 file, and it's going to separate out the audio from the video, and the audio will go one way, and the video will go another way. And the audio pipeline might have an audio decoder, and then something to actually connect it to, like ALSA, or something that's on your board that's going to be connected to a speaker that's going to go out so you can hear it. And the video pipeline is going to have a video decoder that's going to turn, you know, the compressed video into just frames, and then you have to have something to put them on a screen, right? So pretty standard stuff. So in our case, we just left the audio pipeline as it is, full software audio pipeline, because we wanted to really focus on the video acceleration, right? So we had a hardware accelerated video decoder provided by the RCAR platform. The output, after you decode the video, you usually get the video output in YUV color format. So we needed to convert that to RGB so that we could actually put it on the screen, right? Because the YUV doesn't look pretty if you try to display it as RGB. So we use the image processing IP, also provided by the RCAR platform. And we put that into our pipeline as well. And then, of course, we want to output this onto the display. So what our pipeline looks like is like this. So we have, on the left, the hardware drivers for the video decoding. And those are provided by a slightly different API called OpenMax IL. So for anybody who hasn't used that before, it's very, very similar to GStreamer. The idea is the same. You've got a bunch of components that you string together to do stuff. But the API is a little bit different. But the idea is so similar that there are translation libraries that you can use. And there's one called GST-OMX, which we used basically to use an OpenMax component on a GStreamer platform, which is what we have. So basically, we've got the video decoding on the left. In the middle, we've got color conversion. And then on the right, we've got display. And the way the data flows is, so after you decoded the video, that decoded video data moves directly to color conversion. And using the default implementation, the results of that color conversion get mem copied up to the Wayland sync, which then sends those to the server to be composited onto the screen, just like any other application. And that mem copy, the reason we have that mem copy is because the color conversion block in the middle requires physically contiguous buffers, right? But the Wayland sync default implementation uses non-contiguous buffers, generic shared memory buffers. And so the only way to move data between those two is to copy them through the CPU. And that adds a lot of overhead and it slows down everything, and you're not going to get full HD at 30 frames per second doing that. So we said, well, what are we going to do? And well, we knew what we were going to do before we started, actually. So, but basically what we had to do was to, instead of using those generic shared buffers, was to use those same KMS dumb buffers that we've been using the whole time. So what we did, very similar to what we did with the WebKit and implementing the Wayland Buffer Manager, we just modified the functions that are used inside GStreamer to allocate buffers. Specifically the Wayland sync component to allocate buffers. So instead of allocating these generic shared memory buffers, we connected up to libkms and allocated our dumb buffers. And then we also modified it so that it would use the same buffer sharing interface that we've been using all the time as well to share our buffers using WLKMS. And once we had that, our pipeline looked like this. So no more mem copy. Whatever comes out of our color converter goes straight to the compositor, straight to the screen, and we get good performance and full HD at 30 frames per second. So just to wrap up what we learned during this porting exercise. So the first point was, when we're building, we can start with a known good release by picking up the manifest files from the milestone release directories on download.torizon.org. The next thing that we learned was that to pick up the toolchain, we use the mobile branch instead of the IVI branch, and the toolchain is there for us to use. Next was, in order to actually get Wayland Weston working on your system, you have to have a driver that supports the Wayland EGL extension. Right, and that's something that you should get. The chip vendors need to be providing. Right, so you need to be working with the chip vendors, or the chip vendor, or using a chip that the vendors have provided these drivers for. And then you can use something like, depending on the hardware requirements of your graphic stack, you can use something as simple as these KMS dumb buffers, just contiguous memory, and integrate that, and you can get output that way. If you're going to use WebKit, which from the next release actually is going away, apparently, but perhaps there'll be something similar to this Whale and Buffer Manager when everything moves to Crosswalk, but you need to implement that. And then if you want to use the, if you want to have multimedia playback, you can use the same techniques that you used for the WebKit optimizations to get zero copy processing through the multimedia playback pipeline as well. So that's all I have. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to try and answer them. And these are the links that I said I had at the end of this presentation. Yes?
On the very first slide,
yes.
I think I saw Panda.
Yes.
The Panda board.
This is the Panda board, that's right. So the.
Is there some pre-compiled image from the Panda board?
The pre-compiled image for the Panda board is based on IVI 2.0 alpha. So there isn't one for IVI 3.0. Oh, yes.
You talk about the history of changes.
Yes. We've started pushing some of them upstream, and we actually just found so some of the changes that we pushed are related to just like small things like bug fixes and stuff like that. The actual switching of the types of memory buffers that are used, we have not yet pushed upstream. Actually, we found that there's an upstream branch of the Wayland sync that hasn't been merged yet, that has some latest changes that also hasn't been merged, somebody else is developing. So we'll probably need to merge with that before we can push anything upstream. But we have plans to. So it's not upstream yet.
Based on what you said, I don't think there's any architecture specific to those changes.
The only thing that, hang on a second, I've gone back too far. The only thing that might be architecture specific would be, or not architecture specific, but implementation specific would be the buffer sharing Wayland protocol that we use, right? So right now it's using the one that we develop locally. If that gets merged in upstream as a more generic buffer sharing protocol, then yes, I agree entirely. There would be nothing that would be system specific.
Which is why I was asking the upstream question, because part of the link boils down to that upstream owners only need to accept those changes.
Yes.
Because from a Tizen project perspective, we would like to have one implementation, not two.
Yes, of course. Yeah, exactly. So that's all part of the, yeah. Yes. Any other questions? Oh, yes.
Have you done some work or some research on porting the Tizen on platforms that is less powerful? I mean, here we are talking about A9, A15, I mean, OpenGL-ES, very, very powerful, but
yes.
Looking more at the Samsung Gearfit, which has a Cortex M4, or estimated, and microelectronics.
Ah, okay. So
when we are talking about something that is less powerful, do you know how it works? And
we haven't tried it. Oh, so he was asking if we have tried doing this porting onto less powerful devices, right? So not these ARM Cortex A15s and whatnot. And unfortunately, the answer is no, we have not. So this is the only the platforms here are the only ones that we've tested on so far. Any other questions? Well, if not, then I guess that's it for me. Thanks very much.